Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
Hi, I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are with part two of the DH Unplugged compilation of Best Of. Done by Ryan, was it Radisky?
Radisky.
Yeah. Well, he did a fabulous job of getting clips, obviously.
Nice gent from northern Minnesota. And he put together like 1,000 clips in total, 208 clips. And we have a lot to share. Some interesting things, I think. Some great comments we got from listeners from the first one that we put up. So hopefully we'll get the same for this one.
Well, let's start with our first clip. Do you want to introduce it? Do you want me to introduce it?
We'll just introduce. Let this run. I think it'll be interesting. But I'll mention one thing. These segments are all chronological in order, and they're all put together by subject, and a little bit of a sound effect in between, so you know where the first clip starts and second clip.
Yeah, I like the chronology thing because that gives you an example of how we started, how we were thinking at the beginning, and how we wrapped.
Right. So, all right, let's get to the first one.
Well, we've got something now that's kind of related to what we've been talking about with these other clips, and this is the tariffs issue, which Andrew seemed to be jacked up about, and we do have some – some examples, and don't forget this is a chronological series of clips, and so you get a kind of a feeling for the timeline of it all.
Yeah, you remember – I got so crazy about the tariffs. We had your friend, the screamer from No Agenda – create a couple of clips. What was his name? The howler guy. Tariffs.
That was Fletcher you're talking about.
Ah, yes. Fletcher. Yep. All right, let's get right into it. The new Trump tariffs that somehow were put on solar and large residential washing machines. I don't know how they got that one in there. Tariffs causing lots of trouble in the markets. Lots of volatility has returned. It's been there for a little while, but this whole tweet about we're going to impose tariffs, 25% on steel and 10% on aluminum. Oh, my God. The steel companies do well. The auto companies get squashed. Because what will happen is they'll raise the prices domestically to match the tariff price that you can get from somewhere else or just underneath it. That's what happens.
Yeah, that's what you would have to do.
With this week, we saw that the big tariff issue with regard to, we're going to have a 25% tariff on steel, 10% tariff on aluminum, kind of faded a bit, didn't it?
Yeah, that disappeared almost completely.
Well, the tariffs went from 25% in the beginning of the week on steel, like across the board, 25% and 10% on aluminum to, we're going to exclude
everyone.
Mexico, we're going to exclude Canada and other countries. You know how President Trump does that, you know, and many others. I call it the Bubba Gump tariffs. Well, we got big tariffs, little tariffs, carve-out tariffs, negotiated tariffs, excluded tariffs, hard tariffs, soft tariffs, retaliatory tariffs, tariff sell-off, tariff rallies, tariff benefits, tariff losses. I mean, it's just going crazy. Seriously. But now, so where is this thing where we're focusing on China? And why poke the bear? Well, I don't understand. Why are we doing this?
Well, the theory is that Trump is this all early bargaining for trade deals down the road, and this is just a negotiating tactic.
These tactics are not, first of all, they're not professional. They're not even well done. They are surprising not only to the people that you're tariffing, but everybody in your administration. You know, it's the whole thing is crazy. We see the Dow Jones Industrial Average getting hit by tariff concerns, and everything in between is getting a little bit, beaten up at the same time. Mm. What was interesting about the tariff issue with relation to China, where President Trump came out and explained how it was unfair, how they were charging X amount of dollars or percent for, let's say, imports of our goods, yet we weren't charging the same thing. And we're going to have this reciprocal, this mirror tariffs, right? This whole thing that he laid out and how it's not fair. We're going to do something about it. And then there was this number that that somebody put out, this $50 to $60 billion worth of tariffs. Did you see that?
Yes, yes. And I was mystified by it myself.
Yeah, where did it come from is the question, right? So this document that he signed, I read it. And nowhere in there was any hard, fast tariffs. It was essentially a directive to look into the potential and form opinions of where there may be unfair trade practices and then come up with some ideas. You have a 15-day window to do so, then a period of time that will be for comments and discussion, and then put something in there. So there's nothing really engraved in stone. I don't know where we came up with 50, 60 billion or if that number is just floating around somehow.
Hmm.
But it was clearly a one-page document that was more of a directive. So I think this is the same thing we saw with the last round of tariffs. It's a negotiation tactics. You know, it's kind of like, here's the deal. We're going to come back 2 weeks from now. You decide what you're going to pay for us for protection. So what does that do for markets? People are like, well, we don't know exactly what to make of this.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, China comes back with $3 billion of tariffs or a reciprocal type of, deal that will hurt us. And I don't know where they came up with that, but everybody's like, well, they're only coming back with $3 billion. We did $60 billion. So, all right, people are freaked out about this because now this whole thing is escalating. And like I said, we saw a gigantic move down for markets. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, President Trump decides that, you know, if China's going to come back at us with retaliatory tariffs, then, you know what, maybe $50 billion wasn't enough. So he says, you know what, let's add another $100 billion. So that kind of got markets a bit uneasy.
Skittish.
A little nervous. $50 billion of tariffs in total on China. And China comes back and says, okay, we told you that if you do that, we're going to just hit you back with another, you know, equal and reciprocal tariff. So they did. And if this is a poker game, you ever watch poker on TV?
I watch poker. I play poker.
Yeah. So this is the equivalent of either one of two things. So it was a $50 billion bet. It was a $50 billion call. And it was either a four bet or an all-in shove. What do you think about that analogy?
It's, you know, people have said that. I think Blankenfein kind of indicated that.
Well, he got that from me.
But, you know, we don't know.
Well, I mean, it seems to me that this is an over-the-top move to try to really spook China. Which it did, the markets in China and Hong Kong, Shanghai, Shenzhen were all down, you know, multiple percent on the news. Asia was pretty shaken up on this whole thing.
Well, the difference is, of course, that we had Trump says, well, if they do anything, we're going to tariff $200 billion worth of stuff. And of course, China said, well, we'll do something. Then we'll do another $200 billion. The problem with that China has is that they only receive $130 billion worth of our goods versus the what? $130 billion worth of our goods versus us receiving $400 to $600 billion worth of theirs.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Trump's got the upper hand if he wants to go this way.
He does. But the question is going to be, you know, what is that going to end up costing us? It's going to cost consumers something. The reason why we get so much in the way of goods from China is because we like the cheaper items. They make it at a much more affordable rate. This is something that we've created.
No, it's our monster.
And now
it's like a Frankenstein monster.
Yeah, and we're trying to tame it. So now in response to the tariffs, we know that, of course, Europe is imposing tariffs on a variety of things. And China is reciprocating. And China is not only doing that, but I've also noticed something else. Since the beginning, I would say the beginning of April or so, May. Let me just look at my chart here. Yeah, I'll say April. Since the beginning of April, they started to slowly adjust their currency, the reference rate for the yuan. And they're adjusting it lower, weakening their currency. So now, since April, since this whole thing started rolling out with the tariffs and reciprocal tariffs, they have gone on and reduced their currency by about 5%.
Sounds about right. Sounds like something they'd do.
Of course. Why not?
Amazing how they can do it, get away with anything, but they do it.
Tariffs were imposed by Canada and Europe, and there was a much more European tariffs being expressed as being of interest. Don't forget that July 6th, the date is set for many of these tariffs going into effect by the United States against China. So that's only a few days away. All this is a lot of talk right now. There's a lot of talk, the $50 billion, the $100 billion, the $200 billion, all these different things, the 25%, the 10%. A lot of things are just kind of like sitting out there, and there's been a lot of discussion about. And the hope was, hey, we'll make them wet their pants with the fact that we're going to just totally, you know, destroy them with these tariffs and hopefully break them. And that hasn't happened. So I guess there's going to be some further tariffs. Now, in advance of this, in advance of the actual date the U.S. is putting tariffs on, Canada and Europe put the tariffs on. They implemented them. So now we do have tariffs, and we have the clear trade war in full motion.
Yeah, more or less.
Just shows you that tariffs stink. You know what I'm saying?
Well, it did cause economic downturns a number of times in the U.S. history.
Just look at Smoot-Hawley. It caused the recession, the depression. Markets managed to shrug off all the worries about tariffs, the ones that went into place last Friday just a couple days later, actually, $34 billion. All major indices posted gains ahead of the next earnings season, which is going to begin and has already begun this week with the banks reporting at the end of the week. So that's kind of good.
I think Trump's right on one hand. The one hand that this is a situation where China's gotten completely out of control and it should have been dealt with years and years and years ago, instead of us all saying, hey, let's just send all our manufacturing and everybody over to China to do the work. And we just do nothing and just, you know, take the goods and we'll be just guys doing import export for a living. Mm-hmm. But his solution is probably not the best, I'm thinking.
It's like a blunt instrument solution to a problem that, first of all, it's an abrupt solution, right? So we had, as you said, we had years and years of this problem. And all of a sudden, one day, we're like, okay, we're going to stop now. Or at least we're gonna penalize you for all this that we've put into place. And a lot of it was our doing. The results of these tariffs have been a backfire, a gigantic back, which is exactly what I talked about from the beginning. There's no winner in this whole tariff thing. I don't want to get into this whole tariff discussion. Let's just move on. So the point is, we got to pay attention to what's going on, the information. I mean, if you think that the tariffs are not going to impact stocks and companies and prices, you're out of your mind. There is no way possible. It's just a simple equation. Higher input costs equal lower margins. And if you do not believe that that's the case, I don't even know what to say.
Buy.
Yeah, buy. What did I say before? Just buy for the hell of it?
Yeah, buy for the hell of it. Yeah, it's actually phrased better than that.
There was some discussion about new tariffs being proposed if no significant progress was made at the G20 meeting. Now, this was another 500, I think $29 billion of goods. It basically blanket every good that comes in from China at that point. Mm. And the Dow Jones was down at one point 525 points, a reversal of 800 points. Today it was up 430 points. So this is not the kind of action you see in a bull market, by the way. You don't see this. In the ongoing discussion of whether these tariffs are, you know, becoming a problem, some interesting stats.
You mean the threats of tariffs?
There's tariffs on, but the threats of tariffs. We're seeing that exports from the U.S. to China of soybeans drop 94%. That's not a small amount. And then towards the end of the week, there was a lot of hope that there would be some kind of, well, this completion or end or some kind of resolution to the tariffs when President Trump was going to have dinner with President Xi during the G20 on Saturday evening.
Right.
Big hope. There's a big hope going into this. And it was really weird on Friday of last week. We had a gigantic move in the last hour. It was like somebody said, hey, you know what? We're going to do something but might as well get in now. So I don't know who spilled the beans on what was going on there. But my opinion, what I saw at the G20 on Saturday evening when I saw the news come out that there was all these resolutions or there's a deal that's being made where we're going to postpone any additional increases in the tariffs for 90 days to do some more talking. And supposedly there's going to be this agreement by China that they're going to purchase lots of things from the U.S. Lots of things.
Yeah, I heard that.
You know, agricultural things. And they're going to really do a lot of, and no details, of course. There was some comments out that China was going to be reducing tariffs on automobiles from 40% down to 15% with no time frame given. There was nobody, we're going to do this. I don't know if it's next year.
They remind me of the time they got all in on the Paris Climate Accord agreement by saying, we're all in and we'll implement it in 2030.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
We should do the same thing.
Right. We'll do it sometime in the future. They don't say when, but they're playing the same game. You know, the game that Trump is playing with, hey, there's going to be some really good news. We'll let you know. Watch the news. You're going to see some good things happening. There's no time frame. There's nothing. They're just playing this game. So they're going to reduce the tariffs from 40%, and markets seem to like that. And they also said they're going to start buying some soybeans from the U.S. again because they all but stopped buying soybeans. Some stats on tariffs. In October, U.S. companies paid $6.2 billion in tariffs, which is up from $4.4 billion in September and just $3.1 billion in October. On a year-over-year basis, there was a 104% increase, despite just a 13% jump in the value of imports. The total payments in October were the largest tariffs collected in history.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, just for clarity, that is not being paid by anybody besides the companies and you and me. These aren't just magically coming in from other countries. As a matter of fact, other countries aren't paying this at all. It's the companies that are paying this. And that,
sure,
that will flow down to us.
Of course.
Well, that's not
what the doesn't.
Way, that's not the way it's being presented.
This is all good financial information if people like to invest. And the next segment we've got here is a discussion of the record highs and lows in that crazy roller coaster ride we kept watching that I claim is part of because of computer buying and selling. But it affected, there were all kinds of things were affected. The stock price were up and down, the rates were up and down. It was just unbelievable.
I mean, yeah, we had things like in the beginning of the year. There was record movement on the VIX. We had, you know, a record increase in interest rates from a zero base in terms of percentage-based differential. We had yield curve issues. We had stock price and volatility. There's a lot of records throughout the year, or at least, let's just say, major peaks and areas of high velocity that we wanted to cover. So we're going to kind of cover that in this segment.
Okay, let's do it.
Let's see what else I got here to mention. Euro's at a three-year high. Dollar's just plunging.
Oh, yeah, dollar's $1.22. That's terrible.
Plunging. And possibly the reason why we're seeing a little more volatility in the markets is treasury yields are a rising. So we're now at the highest level on the 10-year as it was back in 2014. And I think the 2-year is as high as it was back in 2008. So we're starting to get a little bit of a possibility of an inverted yield curve.
And, that wouldn't be good.
Nope. Now we have the rate decision tomorrow by Yellen, her last meeting. Now in Intel, we know there's been a lot of problems, of course, with regard to their couple of different vulnerabilities with the chips. And meanwhile, the company comes out with earnings and blows the doors off of the earnings. Great quarter. Breaks out to all-time highs.
Yeah.
More importantly than the solid employment number was we had a extremely strong wage growth number. 2.9% on a year-over-year basis, the strongest it's been in decades. And now all of a sudden the concern was, uh-oh.
Yes.
More wages. That's going to equal inflation. The Fed is going to, you know, raise rates.
That was the excuse.
Yeah, that was the excuse. Then we have the potential for a government shutdown this week. And then Monday came around. SPY had a record $23.6 billion in outflows last week.
Wow.
Yep. Big one. Stock buyback announcement soared to a 3-year high in February of $113 billion. Now that's announcements. But still, that goes into the whole idea that companies are announcing a buyback. Individuals are like, well, if they're going to do buybacks, at least we have a floor underneath the price. But I want to talk about this consumer confidence index because don't forget, we are here finding this out. This is February, but this is right after that big run into the end of the year. And of course, that big run into January. And now the consumer confidence index is at a blistering level of 130.8, which is up from 124 in January. Now, every time you mention something like that, it's like, oh, if I said, oh, it's the highest level since 87, or the highest level since 2000, the highest level since 2007, everybody starts getting, whoa, man, that's bad. That doesn't mean anything. Just means it's the highest level since 2000. Drinks are included. So I broke my old
record. Bad idea. People would be falling over to the side.
They were. People were absolutely plastered the entire cruise. Netflix hits an all-time high over $300 per share after they won, I guess, an Oscar. NASDAQ hits an all-time high.
What's triggered that?
It was the combination of, hey, we have a really good economy, and the fact that there really isn't a lot of wage growth pressuring on the inflationary front. Therefore, what that means is that the Fed probably isn't going to go as fast as we thought they would go. You know, every single report, we have to deal with this. You know, are they going to go 3 times or 4 times, 2 times or 5 times? So Apple hit all-time highs this week.
Yeah.
Combination.
Glad I didn't short it.
Yeah, that would have been ugly. Combination of, they had a so-so quarter. It wasn't really the best quarter I've ever seen. I mean, there was some, we talked about this last week, but when they announced the $100 billion buyback, plus some comments from Warren Buffett when he bought 75 million shares in the first quarter.
I would think that had something to do with the run-up.
Yeah. The love, Apple love affair is back. This was something. The 10-year Treasury yields pushed pretty hard today. Levels not seen since 2011. I think it closed very close to 3.1%. The Dow was up, I think, 8 days in a row last week.
Yeah, there was some sort of record.
$650 billion worth of buybacks this year. $650 billion.
Yeah, they were talking about that on most of the news or the stock market analysis shows. It was all going, wow, it's like a record or something. And it's out of control.
Yeah, it was a record. The last record that it surpassed was back in 2007 when we saw 589 $1 billion worth of buybacks. Now, those people that want to fight this are saying, hey, you know what? But markets were a lot lower back then. Stocks were a lot cheaper back then. So now you got to put a lot more into it to meet up. So this really, this record can be diluted a bit with the thought that, you know, there's a lot less, you know, a lot less in comparison. So they're kind of playing it down a little bit, saying, oh, it's not all the stock buybacks that are pushing the markets up, which is bullshit. We know that there's, you know, the buybacks are a big part of this whole game.
Yes, totally. It has to be doing something.
Right.
Come on.
Yeah. And what's interesting is I think you'll find this interesting. So there was a study done and commissioned by, I don't know who it was, maybe Goldman or somebody, saying that buybacks offer investors an effective yield of about 3%. They calculate this by dividing repurchases by the $23 trillion market value of the Standard & Poor's 500 index. And you compare that, or you combine that with the 1.9% current yield. So you have about this buyback of 3%. That's what it gives you, because you're going to boost up the share price and you're going to possibly buy about 3% just by buybacks. And you look at the 1.9% current dividend yield, and investors should get it at least 5% combined for this year.
Unless the stock tanks.
Yeah, that's correct. So, right. So, if
for other reasons.
Right. So, this is just so, therefore, you have to have a downdraft of at least 5% in order to net zero, according to this calculation. Unemployment rate is at a low multi-decade low of 3.8%.
Yep. Believe what you want.
I have a chart of the official while you are going to scramble around.
Yes, you know where I'm going. You know exactly where I'm headed.
And pull up the shadow stats number. We have the big boys hitting new highs. Apple, Netflix, Microsoft, new high. Facebook, new high. Amazon, new high. So today we saw the consumer price index come out, the inflation index. It was up 0.2%, which was as expected. However, it hit a six-year high. The tech-heavy NASDAQ lost about 0.7%. However, it did notch an all-time high middle of the week last week. So we've been talking about this whole idea that the yield curve has been flattening, even though a lot of people over the last year or so have been talking about, oh, the yield curve is widening and it's really good for financials and you got to buy the financials and all that. I'm like, what are they talking about, right? We've had this discussion. Yes. Meanwhile, financials finished at the low for the year today.
Yes, good.
Okay, Deutsche Bank is at the low since it came public. Global equity mutual funds and exchange-traded funds have lost through withdrawals, outflows, $12.4 billion in June through last week, through the 26th. So the outflows are the largest since October 2008 and the fourth largest on record. Stock buyback announcements in the U.S. have swelled to the highest levels on record.
Wow.
In the wake of last year's corporate tax cut. You have banks making all-time highs in their fees, not to mention making money on all sorts of other stuff. And the stocks are still, you know, kind of in the dumper. It shows you how bad things were. $8 billion were earned in the first half of the year, slightly typing the prior record of $8 billion during last year, which was a peak also. Inflation hit a 7-year high last week, 2.73% year over year. Inflation on the wholesale level and consumers are both picking up. Any thought of any concern at all for economic slowdown due to tariffs and other headwinds has just taken a back seat. NASDAQ continues to rally and hitting all-time high after all-time high after all-time high. Here's the problem with Facebook. And, you know, the stock sunk by the most by market cap than any other stock in history in a one-day period. Anyway, the S&P 500 hit an intraday all-time high today.
Yeah, I heard that.
And closed a bit below that level. Buybacks are smash previous records this year. They've averaged $4.8 billion throughout the year, far above $3.2 billion daily in 2007. We did see April consumer confidence come in today at an amazing level, 133.4. These are the conference board's numbers, different than the University of Michigan. So there's two separate numbers. One is a university, private institution. One is the government. Government's numbers came in at 134.4 versus 126, which was the consensus, versus last month, which was 127.4. Now, here's what's really fascinating about this. This reading was the highest since October 2000.
Looks like it's outrageously high.
A 1962 Ferrari 250 GTO. I'm still looking at that story from before. Sold for $48.4 million at Sotheby's annual Monterey Collector car sale.
Yeah, so that's pretty high.
World's record.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Why do you insure something like that? Mm.
After 10 o'clock today, when the ISM manufacturing number came out at the highest level since 2004. There's a chart there.
Yeah, it's pretty astonishing.
Oh, it seems very simple to me. I think we're going to wake up to this one day and recognize that, that's what happened.
And your thesis will be what?
It's the same thing. It's the pull forward effect, which is now called the Horowitz PFE thesis. Pull forward effect theory. Actually, it's a theory, not a thesis. For example, we have the Dow Jones Industrial Average finally catching up to an all-time high, whereas the S&P and the NASDAQ and the small cap index and all the major indices in the United States were at all-time highs. But the Dow was lagging, and it finally caught up. Hit a big week last week for some unknown reason.
Crude oil. There's also apparently, I guess, there's some ships out there filled with oil floating around. You know, we've had this problem before, if you recall.
Yep.
You know, let's pump the oil into these ships and then park the ship somewhere.
Yeah, they do that because they figure that longer term, there's going to be a higher price that they can capitalize on.
Every time they do that, the price goes down.
Well, because there's too much inventory out there, and they count that as inventory to a degree.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So oil is now below 56. When I first started writing this, it was 59. Then it went to 58, below 57. Now it's below 56. It had its worst day in 3 years today, down 26% from its high, and 12 days in a row of down moves on crude is the longest streak on record.
Well, there's a lot of numbers in there for you, or something to think about at least. Now, another major topic of conversation on this show has been the Fed, obviously, because it's what everybody talks about.
Yep.
And we went and predicted what the Fed was going to do, and we hit it 99% of the time. I made my last prediction, which said they weren't going to do anything because I didn't think they would in this last go round, but they did. So I was a fail, but we have a lot of stuff here on the Fed.
Yeah, a lot of stuff because the Fed was front and center of a lot of the volatility and, you know, question about where we're going to go and question about why they're doing this and just, you know, anyway, enough of that. Right to this clip, to the segment on the Fed. I think both of us would like to provide a warm welcome to Jerome Powell as the next Fed chair. The Senate confirmed him today. If you don't really understand anything about the Fed and how they operate, I think this in itself shows you that they are just there to support the banks the whole time. And even if they do something awful and terrible, like what they did during 2005 through 7, they're there just to back them. And they didn't say
anything. Seems so.
And they didn't do anything. A couple of slaps on the hand to Wells Fargo for the fake accounts, all the consumer abuses and all that. Well, in a party gift, she says, the Federal Reserve has ordered Wells Fargo to halt its growth, citing widespread consumer abuses. Yeah. They will restrict the growth in the firm until it sufficiently improves its governance and controls. The bank is barred from growing beyond its size at the end of 2017 until it is satisfied that the Fed has approved it. And the bank must submit a plan within 60 days how it's going to do this. So they can't grow past whatever they're at this point. That's pretty nasty.
I say this is probably as nasty as it gets, although you may might indicate that they're not at this size. This whole thing is a scam, and they can grow into the size that they're currently at.
Oh, my God. Inflation's going to get out of control. The Fed's going to have to start ratcheting rates. And what's happening? Now a lot of companies and analysts and economists are pricing in 4 rate hikes throughout 2018 rather than 3. It is confusing, and that's part of the plan, by the way. That's part of what they try to do. I mean, the king of that, and probably my favorite of all time, was Greenspan.
Yes.
I mean,
he would say with the weirdest stuff.
He's like a pocket thesaurus. He said that in terms of gradual rate hikes this year, that may mean 4 by the end of 2018. So that's not, people aren't too happy about that. Well, maybe we're not going to have 4 rate hikes this year. That's all of this nonsense is all about. When it comes, it's all it's all about.
It's nuts.
Yeah. And then the market sold off today. We did a 400 plus point round trip. And some concern about this week's data. We have the Fed is meeting today and tomorrow, but tomorrow's going to be a rate hike announcement potentially. That's the expectation.
You think?
Well, that's what they think.
Was everyone expecting quarter?
Yeah, quarter. There is some murmurs about a surprise 0.5%. That would totally freak people out.
It's not that one. That's not going to happen.
No. So there's some question about, well, we know at least what has been pretty much baked in is 3 rate hikes at 25 basis points or 0.75% for the end of the year total. That would probably be March, June, December, something like that. And there's some murmur about maybe 4 rate hikes this year. So we saw that on Wednesday, there was a rate hike decision. And the first time that Jerome Powell, the new Fed chairman, came up to give his presentation afterwards. So at 2:00, the announcement came out that they're raising rates by 0.25%.
Right, which is what we predicted. Yep. And everybody predicted.
Everybody predicted. There was nothing. It was pretty much baked in the cake. As usual, whenever the Fed has a major meeting, markets seem to just spike. It's like the algos and the machines are programmed to do so. I've said this 100 times. When the Fed is reducing rates, the bullish argument is don't fight the Fed. Rates are coming down. They're really being very friendly to the markets. They're trying to pump it up and bring asset prices up. Don't fight the Fed. That's a standard line. However, when rates go up, well, the last several times when rates went up, stocks went up too, because it's really a good sign. The economy's good. And you know what? Even though the Fed is raising rates, you know, you want to be in stocks. No matter what happens, you want to be in stocks.
Yeah, this thing.
They're talking about another 6 rates by the time 2019's over. So that's another 1.5% if they just do it by 25 basis points.
Well, they just do it all at once right now.
Yeah, that would piss people off. That would not.
Think?
Yeah, oh yeah. Markets would not be happy. You know, you watch TV and, oh, what do you think about what the Fed's going to do Wednesday? Oh, it's baked in. Everybody, it's baked in.
It's baked in.
It's baked in. The hike is going to happen. The question is well, are we going to have 2 or 1 more for the rest of the year? They're going to do September. I watched somebody on Bloomberg talk about how, listen, here's the deal. It's baked in for this. We know that's happening. It's a done deal. Okay. Then there's possibly 1 in September, 1 in December. Now, September is in between now and December. This is what they're talking about. This is the people that get on TV to tell you about what's possibly happening in the financial markets. Explaining how September is in between now and December.
I'm glad they straightened that out. Yeah. It was controversial.
he goes through this, he wraps himself in a corner and ends up saying absolutely nothing. And once again, just as it looked, you've heard this before, once again, just as it looked like there was a potential for a swoon in the U.S. markets, something happened, stick save, they call it, and markets seemed to get just so much better. How many times have you heard that over the last couple of years?
Stick save?
Yeah, stick save.
I've only heard it once.
Very recently, by any chance?
Yeah, like just about, I'd say about 30 seconds ago.
Yeah, stick save. It was, seems like the markets will test out the lows. They'll grovel around at those areas. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, they pick up and everything's just wonderful. And some of the there's some reason for that.
Part it's got to be computer algos.
There's the algos, but it's also timing of I am very convinced that all the economic data, the Fed reports and all that are very well timed, have been researched to put them out at certain intervals from each other. To, you
could
know,
be.
Yeah. I just want to say something for the freaking record, okay? Duh. The whole point of the Fed tightening is to slow things down and to keep it normalized so it doesn't overheat to a point that we just explode. And these people that are so hooked on this whole Fed crap really is starting to piss me off. I need to calm down a little bit here.
No, yeah, but, you're irked.
Oh, because these guys that are hooked on the Fed, which I get, you know, you want to keep the Fed going, free money or easy money and keep the stock market going. I'm all for that, man. But at the same time, you can't expect that to go on forever, because if you do, you're going to have moral hazards all over the place. You're going to get bubbles all over the place and you're going to bust and it's going to be devastating on the back end.
Well, the Fed was formed for the purposes of preventing, even though it never has really done it. But it has minimized it if you look at older histories. But they were formed to stop bubbles.
Right. And exactly. Somebody needs to rein in when things are getting out of hand. And these guys that keep on talking about how the Fed's not stupid. The Fed doesn't want to kill the markets. The Fed doesn't want to kill the economy. But at the same time, and we can see that over the last 9 years as absolute proof. So they're not going to, they may do things that are stupid, which I do think they do on a regular basis. But don't forget, these guys also have investments and things like that. They don't want to kill the goose.
Yeah.
I need to.
Not that many are all in with gold.
Yeah, exactly. The reinvestment in bonds or in the buying of bonds and the drawing down liquidity and raising interest rates and the dollar going higher is a major problem for the rest of the world. And no wonder why, if you really back up for a second and you think about why has the Fed been so slow to raise rates considering all the things that are going on in the U.S. because of the interconnectedness of the rest of the world and how this really drives significant amount of there's so much leverage that is driving so much of the markets, leverage in the form of fixed income and low interest rates and tied to the dollar. I mean, it's just a mess, just a mess.
Well, as long as you've been doing this show, it's been a mess most of the time. I'm looking at the dollar now. It is down to a nice $1.13 against the euro, which just seems to be more like it. 111 against the yen, and $1.27 against the British pound, which is extremely low and it's traditionally around $1.50, $1.60. So it's probably not a bad time to go traveling.
Yeah, I agree with that, especially in Europe.
Yeah, Europe's got to be right now. It's got to be right now is the ideal time to get over there.
Get right over to the islands over to Portugal. And then President Trump was all about, they're going to ruin everything. They're going to ruin the party. The Fed's raising too fast. Said again today, his biggest fear. What's his biggest fear? It's that the Fed is raising rates too fast. No longer is it Mueller. No longer is it North Korea. Nope. It's the Fed is raising rates too fast. Goldman came out last week. I don't know if they're trying to push the market down or just freak people out, or I don't know what they're trying to do here, but they predicted the Fed will actually raise rates 5 more times through the end of 2019. Do you think that's possible?
Well, yeah, I think it's very possible. I don't know why they'd do it, but it's possible.
So the same thing when it comes to this right now. That's what everybody seems to be going with all these numbers that are related to how the Fed is going to react, and it's going to end in death or a market crash.
Crash, big crash.
Yeah. There's a lot of discussion going in right now, kind of a whispers behind the scenes that it's possible that the Fed blinked. The Fed kind of came off a little bit in a couple of their speeches recently that said that, well, we're going to be more data dependent, which is a change of language from where they were. When Yellen was there, it was always data dependent and dot plots. They come up with all this horse shit. Fed Chairman Powell was kind of walking back some of the comments of late where they talked about how there was a, this direct path, and now they're changing it to being data dependent. So that was kind of, markets took it as a softening stance and rate hike. So that was good. Some interesting things there. I mean, obviously, there's a lot to learn from, you know, that whole area. But I thought this is next. Ryan put together a compilation of John C. Dvorak squarely. I mean, I'm in there a little bit, but really focusing in on your, you don't have as many issues as I have.
Well, I'm calmer, but I'm not in the market going nuts.
Right.
So it makes sense. But I do, this is a lot of some of my stories, the phone ring, and I mean, some of the stuff is just, it's not that interesting, but.
It's great. I like it.
You liked it. Well, let's see if the people out there like it. Let's
sure.
Play it.
All right. So what do you think about that? You know, the market's dictating the price of the analyst. I mean, could we say that analysts are not even worth anything anymore? Or?
Well, I think that I don't know what to think of any of this, to be honest about it. I'm quite confused. Yeah, so I had a lot of bad picks.
Yeah, it happens.
Well, it's just a cyclical thing. Yeah, you get on a roll, and next thing, it's good to know.
Yeah. You're going to probably charge right up after this.
It seems unlikely. But I would say, what is the biggest number on – well, you got the biggest number, 35. Yeah, there you go. I have the second biggest.
No, I have the second biggest. Sorry. I have 35 and 31.
Oh.
I think
you got the third biggest.
Yeah, it's all right. Don't feel bad.
Yeah, okay. I'm sure you would. I think the year before would have gone differently, but
yep.
You didn't do the pop quiz last year.
Sorry.
They're actually having whole shows of commercials. I mean, I think it's making a fool of the public. I don't think the commercials are that. There's two or three of them that are okay. I didn't see anything that was knocked my socks off, and I skipped a lot of them. Talking robots was kind of funny. The avocado commercial I liked.
The Doritos commercial was kind of good.
I didn't care for that.
No.
I didn't care for the Dodge commercial using Martin Luther King. I think it's something of a scam.
Yep. And what happened to your Twitter themes? You had the old cars for a while. You had What happened to all those?
They burn out. I did the old cars for a while. Then I did. You're right. I had about three or four themes. I get into it. Right now, my theme. Then I think it already blew up, which is what new song will replace the national anthem.
And what they did to Fergie is terrible. So if everybody's on board with a retest of the February lows before a new high by the end of the year, then we have, again, no test of a lows or a test and a break lower with no bounce.
I would go, it could be either one of those two. It's going to be one or the other of those two.
Right.
And I would guess that would be the one that where it goes lower. That's the one that takes into account the cycle. The economic cycle takes into account the need to screw over Trump's economy so they can get him voted out. And it also accounts for the municipal bonds and some of these other shaky city-wide problems that we're going to have with corporate and well, with corporate with eventually, but
yeah,
the stuff that has to do with unfunded liabilities.
Right. Why don't you pitch the donation? Let me see how it's done by an expert.
I think people out there who listen to this show, I think they get a balanced report that's a little unusual. It's not what you hear on CNBC. And I believe that this is worth something to you. And it's not like we're asking for a ton of money, but if you have something, in other words, if you consider the show worth anything, pass it along. I think this is going to end up being a bonanza for Facebook.
How is it a bonanza?
It's going to be a bonanza once everyone gets a clue. Once this thing calms down and they realize that Facebook is the only way to go for targeting for both sides. I mean, it's not just one side.
So you're going to put that in for the game this week then?
Yep.
There you go. All right. Put your fake money where your mouth is, buddy. We'll see what happens. So let us know when you actually dropped your LinkedIn.
Yeah, it'll be a while. So I have to get over 6,000 followers, or what? It's not followers. It's called something else. Connections.
Connections, yeah. I sent that to you, the quarterly.
No, I didn't get it.
I did send it to you.
Okay, I'll look.
Yeah, I sent it to you. I sent a lot of things to you that I haven't got responses from. But I have these written down. I know how to do this now. I figured you out. After all these years.
Yeah. Probably a lot of venereal diseases going around that crowd, I'm guessing.
Sounds like a little bit of jealousy here.
But if you're homeless and you're shooting up at the BART station, I don't think your prospects are very good.
Each time we talk about employment, you bring up the shadow stats, and we talk about how the jobs number, according to the old methodology, is, 18 or 20%, right? That's the going discussion.
Yeah.
When, if ever, do we switch the conversation to what the new levels are and look at those as the, we kind of a little, in a way, we sound like, oh, I remember the day when pretzels were a nickel and I can go to there and get I can get it from the soda jerk and I can get a soda for 2 cents. But no, seriously, when are we going to switch over? Not to beat this horse here, but when are we going to switch over to the discussion that says, okay, well, we're at 3.9. What was yesterday's numbers are yesterday's numbers. These are the new set of numbers. This is the new baseline. And that's what we'll talk about.
I'm never going to switch over because I think it's a scam. I don't believe for a minute there's 3.9% unemployment. That's telling me that 3.9% of the population that might want to work is the only group that can't get a job, or they don't want to work, get a job, or whatever the reason is. When it's obvious, if you can look around and you see there's more people than that out of work.
Right. But
I mean, you can, if you want to just pretend, yeah, I guess it's great. Yeah, we got 3.9% unemployment. It's fantastic. I can do that if you want me to.
No, you don't have to do that. I'm just wondering. I mean, if I was selling oil, I'd want it to be as high as possible. If I was producing oil, I want it to be as high as possible. So, you're right there?
Sorry.
You're dropping things? You got your
No, I just moving something and it's hitting some. I've got some ceramics here.
Ah.
You can hear that?
Yeah. Do you make your own ceramics? Or have you done that? Paint your own ceramics in like a class?
Oh, yeah. Everybody in the family does that.
Oh, they do not?
Yeah. I'm not even kidding.
You go to there, you do the painting, you put it in the kiln, and then you bring it home?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. What do you make? What kind of things?
Well, I don't do much. I mean, I make stuff that's just splatter paint. But the kids, my daughter in particular, make all kinds of elaborate things. And she actually can rent out the studio space, and she actually throws a pot and then has the kiln to herself.
Wow. Do you guys, have you done macrame in the past too?
No. That is not, no macrame, that's out. It's not on the list. It's a good one though. Nice try.
Yeah, sorry. I don't know if you... listen to this. I sent you a file on this last week. the Tesla conference call?
No, I missed it. I missed it. Sorry.
Oh.
It sounds very sketchy.
Yeah. Now from around the world, we need like a jingly. Around the world. Japan household spending fell 0.7% in March from a year earlier. Mark, are you opening up a piece of mail?
You know, I'm not going to be able to do anything with this mic.
This mic picks up everything. I also hear, what do you have for dinner? Because I hear your stomach rumbling. Anything to say about that?
I'm not commenting on this dildo assertion.
No? You don't believe it? Or you haven't? Or you don't like it?
I'm just not saying anything.
Do you like the beginning of the month better or the end of the month better? Do you have a particular time of the month that you like better?
Depends on the month.
June. Do you like the beginning of June better or the end of June?
I like the end of June better. The weather's better.
And let's take I don't know, September.
Yeah, September, I'd probably like the beginning.
The beginning of September. Okay, so you have a definite rating system for the months.
It's not that definite, but I probably do, yes.
Yeah, but okay. Do you get in better moods or worse moods or anything? Is anything that or just sort of subtly in the background?
I don't track my moods. I should.
Yeah. John McAfee.
Yeah.
Now, back in the day when he was actually a respected technology dude.
Entrepreneur, yeah.
Did you know him? Did you meet him? Did you ever have any?
Oh yeah, I had dinner with him.
You did, and what was that like?
He is a. This is a long time before he became kind of weird, but he was the guy who pretty much popularized the idea of computer viruses. He had a newsletter. He promoted the idea that they were all going to kill us all, and then he had a solution to the problem that he kind of created. I thought he was a marketing genius, and then he sold out and made a. Millions and millions, I don't know, half of, 100, 200, $300 million in a sellout.
I think it was Symantec bought it, right?
Yeah, Symantec bought him. And then he became a vagabond. He bought some place in the middle of the nowhere desert, somewhere in Colorado or something up in the mountains. And then kind of disappeared from the scene, turned up in Belize with some scheme down there. But he got strung out on a lot of substances.
Well, now he's been caught up in an alleged assassination attempt. He's claimed he's poisoned.
Yes, this is the latest. Somebody's trying to kill him now.
And by the way, supposedly he has survived several assassination attempts.
That's what he says, yeah.
I don't know why somebody wants to kill him, but he says that his enemies have spiked something and showed pictures of him wired up to everything at the Vidant Medical Center in North Carolina. I mean, he was this guy. He had a feeding tube down. He had IVs in. He looked like he was pretty much in the super ICU unit after a major, major catastrophe. He was unconscious for 2 days.
Yeah. Still manages to tweet.
And somehow it's automated. It's automated. He probably has some kind of a Twitter attached to his brain automatically somehow, and he can. Through some kind of telekinesis or something type.
Well, yes, McAfee is a interesting guy. I think he still owes me a dinner.
And now I wouldn't go. Supposedly he's looking to introduce a physical cryptocurrency. Let me just restate that.
Oh yeah, he's gotten on the cryptocurrency bandwagon big time.
Right, but now listen to this, you have to listen closely. He's looking to introduce a physical cryptocurrency.
Which makes no sense. And last time anyone tried pulling some physical currency, workaround was the Rand Paul coin or Ron Paul coins. Remember those? Ron Paul, a series of coins, Ron Paul coins. It was supposed to be some sort of alternative money. And the feds just cracked down and busted them and threw half the guys in jail.
Yeah.
I don't want to be catty, but you should short Facebook again. Then.
I am short Facebook.
Okay.
I'm good. Short Facebook.
I find warm nuts somewhat disturbing.
So the big news of the week that people were all flutter about was the rather crazy Twitter post that you had going on. What were you hacked?
No, I wasn't hacked actually. But what I had done is at some point I wanted to do something, and I agreed to letting one of these, and I thought it was a legitimate site, use, you know, you could use my Twitter account because I've given certain permissions.
Right.
So I gave this thing, it's like TweetDeck, or it wasn't TweetDeck, but it was like one of those systems. And it turns out that I was hornswoggled, and it was just some sort of spammer. And somebody said, hey, go check out what you've what you're connected with. And I went down, looked at my list. I said, oh, that there it is that thing. And I just cut it off.
Yeah, because you were getting actually when I clicked something, it looked interesting. So I clicked it, but then it said, oh, I have to allow Twitter.
Yeah, well, that's the trick. That's what they were. If you did that, then you'd be suckered, too.
Yeah, I didn't like that at all. So I figured it, well, everybody figured something was going on.
No, but everybody figured it out, yeah. But me. Don't try to pick up a hooker and have the car impounded. I don't want to see that either.
You've been doing this a while. Do you play?
A monkey and a dartboard. That's my recommendation.
Do you participate?
No, of course not. Mm. I have the same chance of winning whether I participate or not. Right. So.
The question to ask you is this a time to buy, or is there a retest of the lows possible?
Well, I know why you're asking me, but I will say that I have looked at the shadow stats numbers for the GDP.
Yeah.
And you've seen that, my commentary on that, which makes it seem as though we haven't even seen the market move yet. I'd probably suggest buying. I think Trump's going to be able to keep these balls in the air for throughout the midterms and maybe all the way to 2020. That's not going to happen.
It happened once before.
Just because it happened. When was this?
2012, I think. 2014?
I think there was I'm not buying it. And I don't like the idea of somebody else owning my roof. Just for some reason, it just doesn't work for me.
And then what would be the purpose of that?
To make people panic in an area and start selling their places so you can pick them up cheap.
Oh, there you go. Oh, so we create a mass hysteria and then buy in on the low price when people are just dumping.
Yeah.
Oh. All right. I don't know if there's anything illegal to that, but
I don't think there could be.
No.
Well, we hope you enjoyed the finale of our two-part Best of DH Unplugged show with all those clips. Hopefully we can do it again sometime. We have somebody that likes making clips. And
does anybody like making clips?
I think some people do like making clips.
Well, he said he's going to start working this year or next year on the clips each show to make his life a little bit easier, because I think he lost a lot of sleep over the last week.
Oh yeah, you can't do that.
Yeah, Ryan did great. Ryan Redsky did just Redisky.
Redisky. We'll be back with a live show next Tuesday.
Yep, we'll do. See you then.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.